case number 5, 22-465. Lots of people here today. Sergeant, would you please identify yourself and your witness?
Sergeant Elias Martz, M-A-R-T-Z, with the Middletown Police Department. The witness is retired sergeant from the Middletown Police Department, Nicholas Babulol.
Sir, can you spell your last name, please?
B-A-B-O-O-L-A-L.
Got that, Nancy?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Counsel, can you please identify yourself for the record?
Ralph Sherman, representing the appellant.
Okay, we'll do your witness identification as we go through that. Sergeant, would you like to make an opening statement?
No, thank you.
Yes.
He's going to talk for you, but he's going to go first.
Our investigation revealed numerous suitability issues, including multiple police involvements, domestic-related incidents, alcohol and mental health issues, firearms-related issues, and past protective orders, all of which showed the appellant not to be a suitable candidate for a pistol permit. Additionally, 4 records of arrest, including for felony domestic charges, were located on publicly available documents.
Okay. Opening statement, Attorney Sherman?
I'll pass, thank you.
Okay, Sergeant, you may proceed with your case.
The investigation, as I said, revealed numerous police involvements, domestic-related incidents, alcohol and mental health issues, past protective orders, and firearms-related cases. In regard to the protective orders for which the appellant was named a respondent, there was a protective order that was issued on October 19th, 2009, and remained in force for 228 days. I referenced charges of assault, third, and disorderly conduct. The charges based on the protective order were listed as being nollie. Issued in June 28th of 2010, there was a protective order in force for 722 days. That listed the charges of assault third, for which the appellant was found guilty.
Let me stop you there. Does he have a conviction for assault in the third degree?
No, he no longer does.
Okay. I ask, you know why I ask, because it would be a disqualifier.
Yes.
It's too old to be this qualifier.
It's 2011, right?
It was 2010 for that.
Oh, it's a moot point.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
There is no longer a conviction. Issued in January 26th of 2011, enforced for 510 days, listing the charge of disorderly conduct, which was nollied. There was a protective order issued August 26, 2011, which was enforced for 298 days for the charge of violation of a protective order, which was nollied. There was a charge, there was a protective order October 26 of 2011, which was enforced for 237 days, which listed the charges of sale of controlled substance, violation of a protective order, possession of marijuana, and disorderly conduct, sale of controlled substance, and violation of protective order. Again, those listed as being guilty, but those charges no longer stand on the appellant's record. In regard to the protective orders, there was a total of 1,995 days, or 5 years and 170 days, under which the appellant has been the subject to a protective order, which the issuing authority found to be a lengthy period of time. In regard to police involvements with the appellant, there's case number 09-0124, which the appellant caused alarm at a gas station and was located with a rifle in the trunk of his vehicle. Case number 095474 was a verbal domestic dispute involving the appellant. Case number 117363 was another verbal domestic dispute. Under case number 119513, the appellant appellant was found to have suicidal ideation and was sent to the hospital on a police emergency examination request and was intoxicated at the time of the case. Under case number 11-16939, the appellant caused alarm to neighbors with a pellet gun. Under case number 11-17716, another verbal domestic dispute. Case number 11-19655 was another verbal domestic dispute. Case number 11-20646 was another verbal domestic dispute. Case number 12-29325 was another verbal domestic dispute in which the appellant was found to be intoxicated by the responding officers. Case number 14-02578 was a suspicious person complaint. The appellant caused alarm to the neighbors with an air rifle, which at the time appeared to be a firearm. Case number 14-2601, another verbal domestic dispute. Case number 16-19692, another verbal domestic dispute. Case number 17-01529, another verbal domestic dispute in which the appellant was found to be intoxicated. Case number 17-10260, the appellant was found to have driven through the lawn of a neighbor, causing approximately $1,000 in damage. Case number 19-02603, neighbors and state workers reported hearing gunshots from the residence of the appellant. The appellant denied involvement. However, a window was found open. There was a crossbow found on the table. The appellant's father stated that the appellant only had BB guns. The appellant at the time was a convicted felon, which would have prohibited firearm possession or use. Case number 19-21425, verbal domestic dispute in which the appellant was found to be intoxicated. All of these cases, I believe, were included in the packet. Based on an online search for publicly available information, articles were located referencing an arrest on October 17, 2009 for assault in the third degree and disorderly conduct, an arrest on June 28, 2010 for assault in the second degree, which is a felony, two counts, assault in the second degree of an elderly victim, which is a felony and disorderly conduct, an arrest on August 25th, 2011 for violation of a protective order, and an arrest on October 25th, 2011 for violation of protective order, disorderly conduct, possession of a controlled substance, and illegal sale of a controlled substance. Based on the above listed suitability issues, which included the police involvements, four of which the appellant was found to be intoxicated, one of which the appellant was found to have suicidal ideation, lengthy history of protective orders, which were issued on five separate occasions, public records of four arrests, which include domestic felony charges, and four incidents in which the appellant caused alarm with a firearm or air rifle, the appellant was denied a pistol permit. In reference to the publicly available information of the arrests, there was found an article which was included in the packet from the Middletown Eye, which was dated June 29th of 2010. This is the article to which the witness will be testifying. The article shows the name of the appellant and lists the charges of assault second degree, two counts, assault second, victim 60 plus, and disorderly conduct, and goes on to say, on June 26th of 2010, at approximately 8:17 a.m., Middletown police officers were dispatched to a location for a domestic assault. The accused appellant went to his grandmother's home to retrieve a borrowed iPad and money that was taken from him by his brother. The appellant's brother told him he did not have the iPad. The appellant was upset and went outside, grabbed a metal pipe approximately 5 feet long and started swinging it at his brother. The brother and the brother's girlfriend were both struck in the arm and seriously injured due to blows from the pipe. The appellant's grandmother tried to break up the fight and was knocked to the ground and seriously injured her leg. All three victims were transported to Middlesex Hospital for treatment. As part of the investigation, I contacted retired Sergeant Babulal to inquire if he had any memory of the appellant. He replied that he did, and I had him show up as a witness today.
Before we get there, do you have any cross for the sergeant?
Yeah, I guess I do, please. Mark, just a couple of questions. The appellate, as of today, has no criminal records, is that correct?
That is correct.
Not anywhere, right?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. In your list here, these cases that begin with two digits, like case number 119513, case number 17-1210260, the first two digits, that's the year, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the most recent one would be from 2019, correct?
Yes.
Which would be 5 years ago, right? Round numbers, 5 years, from 19 to 24, right?
Approximately.
Okay. And case number, your case number 19-02603. Neighbors and state workers reported, this is your writing here, I assume, reported hearing gunshots. But there was no gun, right?
I can try to locate the report in my records here. So the investigating officer did state in their report, I was unable to locate any shell casings or other evidence that he had been shooting, referring to the appellant. Okay. However,
so my question is, there wasn't any evidence. I'm asking you the question, sir. I think you answered my first question. Here's my second question. There wasn't any evidence found that there was a firearm in his possession, correct?
Part of the investigation was that someone reported that they had heard four gunshots that they believed were .22 caliber coming from that residence.
Okay.
And they believed that they observed impacts in the water, given that the area was flooded at the time, with floating objects such as bottles.
That's all very interesting, but there wasn't any evidence that there was a firearm in his possession, right?
There was no direct evidence of that. There were witness statements that were part of that investigation.
No firearm was found, right?
Correct.
No empty cases, right?
Correct.
No smell of powder or powder marks on the appellant or anything like that, right?
Not that was noted in the report, no.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that was very clear. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Does the board have questions of the sergeant? Okay, seeing none, sergeant, you may proceed with your witness.
Can you explain to the board what your involvement in the police department is?
I'm a retired sergeant. I retired after 22 years. I've been retired for the last 2 years. In reference to the appellant, I do have recollection of issues and instances with him and his propensity for violence. On one such occasion, we responded to his father's house where him and his brother had gotten to a domestic. When we went inside, the house was completely destroyed. There was holes in the walls. I believe there was even an arrow shot into one of the ceilings. After that, there was a protective order issued. Moving forward, there was another issue.
I would object to this testimony because we don't know if this happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, last week.
Can we lay a foundation of when this happened, please?
Very important.
Is the first incident that you're referencing one for which the appellant was arrested?
It was one of them, yes.
Okay. Do you recall what the appellant was charged with at the time?
I don't remember the exact charges on that one. But I do remember the follow-up incident where they were at the grandmother's house and they got into a dispute and the grandmother got knocked down and fire. Okay. And believe that she had broken her hip, and that was the second incident that I was present for.
Sergeant, can you tell us when this happened?
You'd have to refer to the dates that Sergeant Martz gave you.
So this is your personal recollection?
What?
you don't have any idea when this happened?
I've been retired 2 years, and I don't have access to the reports.
Okay.
Was it in the last 5 years?
Yes.
Last year?
It was in the last couple of years before I retired.
We've already had testimony that there haven't been any incidents since 19, which is 5 years ago.
The incident
makes no sense.
Being referenced involving the appellant's grandmother, according to the article from the Middletown Eye, occurred on June 26, 2010.
2010, so that was 14 years ago,
okay.
Sir, correct?
Yep.
Thank you.
It still doesn't change the fact that he has a propensity for violence that I've witnessed.
Can you relay any specifics that you recall from the incident in 2010 involving the appellant and his grandmother?
Well, when we responded, we had to treat medically first. Fire took care of that. I assisted with them getting grandmother out of the house because they thought she had broken her hip. We secured the individual and followed proper procedure when it came to making the arrest for a domestic.
Are there any other incidents that you recall with the appellant?
Again, like I said, during my 22 years there, come across him for domestic incidents at the father's house.
Do you object to any testimony that doesn't tell us when?
I don't have access to the reports.
That's sustained because any evidence that you can give us has to be based on your personal recollection. So if you don't have...
It is my personal recollection, but I don't recall the exact date.
Okay, well, he can tell us what he knows. It'll go to wait. So if you want to continue answering.
The question was just if you recalled any other specific incidents or in any specific interactions with the appellant.
Just the ones I spoke about.
Is that it?
That's it for now, yes.
Okay, Cross?
No, thank you.
Does the board have questions for the sergeant?
What were the nature of the injuries? In both cases, start with the first one. With that,
the first one, it was that I recall at the father's house. There was no injuries. It was just a domestic between him and his brother, and there was damage throughout the house. Now with the grandmother, like I said, when I got on scene, they were treating her, and the way she got knocked down, they thought she had broken her hip. So they took a bed sheet, they wrapped up her hips as they do, and we helped move her out to the stretcher.
Okay, I got a little mixed up. I thought one would involve the pipe and the brother, but
the second one where grandmother got hurt was one that involved the pipe.
Okay, and was the brother struck?
Yes.
And what were the nature of his injuries?
I couldn't. That would be part of the report.
You don't remember?
I don't remember, but it's there in the report that a Sergeant Martz testified to.
And Attorney Sherman referenced this as the brother. Is that okay? Is that correct? Do you concur? Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions by the board?
Can you describe your interaction with the appellant in those incidents?
Every time I interacted with them, they were uncooperative.
Thank you.
But we had to rely mostly on physical evidence. Obviously, there's holes in the walls, there's damage, there's something going on, injury to mom, grandmother. That's what we were basing a lot of stuff off of, was physical evidence. They were uncooperative.
Have you made an arrest of the appellant?
Me personally, I was a sergeant, but there were other officers there that made the arrest.
And how was his conduct during those incidents?
He was uncooperative, to my recollection.
Uncooperative, as in, can you describe what that means?
Uncooperative is somebody when you try to interact with them to get questions or find out what happened, like nothing happened, I'm not doing this, I didn't do that, it's nobody's business, things like that, where they refuse to be cooperative with the investigation. Stonewall.
Anything in terms of resisting?
I don't feel that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions by the board? Seeing none. Do you have any other? Yes? Oh, follow up.
Excuse me. Question, please, Sergeant. Your most recent interaction with the appellant was probably about 14 years ago, right?
Probably, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other witnesses, Sergeant?
No.
Okay, Attorney Sherman.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to call the appellant, please. So, tell the board, please, how old are you today?
36.
Speak up, please. It's hard to hear.
36.
Are you working?
Yes.
What do you do for work?
I am a heavy equipment operator for the local 478 International Union of Operating Engineers.
So what type of equipment do you operate?
Forklifts, bulldozers, excavators, haul trucks, everything on a job site.
Okay, how long have you been doing this type of work?
11 years.
11 years. And do you recall all or most of the incidents that we heard about?
Not all of them.
Not all of them. Okay. You haven't had an incident in approximately 5 years, right?
Correct.
Was something going on back then that it hasn't been going on for the past several years, as far as your life?
It was a rough patch with alcohol.
Can you elaborate on that, please? What do you mean by a rough patch with alcohol?
I think I was drinking to self-medicate, and I was taking it too far.
So how often were you drinking?
3 to 4 times a week.
And how much were you drinking when you drank?
More than I should have been.
Well, how much is that?
7 or 8 beers and maybe some harder alcohol mixed in with it.
And when was that going on in your life, from about when to when?
I would say my mid-20s to my early 30s.
Okay. And when these incidents happened, was it always true you were intoxicated at the time?
I would say at least 80% of the time, yes, there was alcohol involved.
Would that include the incidents involving, say, your father and your brother?
Yes.
Do you remember an incident involving grandmother?
Yes.
Was she injured?
Yes.
Do you remember the nature of the injury?
I believe it was her leg.
Okay. They said maybe she broke her hip. Did she break her hip?
I think so, yes.
And you still drank?
No.
How did that happen?
I decided I would have a better quality of life by quitting alcohol.
What had you thinking that way?
It's a lot of alcoholics in the construction field, and I did not want to end up that way towards the end of my career.
So, how did it come about that you stopped drinking? I mean, what did you do? Did you just decide one day, I'm not going to drink anymore?
Yes, I woke up one day and said, that's it, I've had enough.
Were you at a particularly low point at that time?
I wouldn't say particularly low point. It was just I was getting older, and I realized to have a long, successful life, it was important for me to just quit 100%.
So do you think that the reason, do you think that there's a connection between the fact that the police have nothing about you in the past 5 years and you stopped drinking? Do you think there's a connection?
Yes.
Strong connection?
Strong connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have no criminal record. Did you get a pardon?
Yes, I did.
You did. You did that on your own?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When did you get the pardon?
I would say about 8 to 9 years ago.
Okay. And that incident with neighbors reported gunshots and no firearm was found. Did you have a firearm?
No.
I have nothing further.
Sergeant, do you have any cross for the appellant?
Yes. So you stated that you no longer drink alcohol.
Correct.
Is that correct? And you stated that is it correct that you attended no treatment for alcohol?
Correct.
Have you ever attended AA?
No.
You also stated that you believed that you were self-medicating with alcohol at that time of your life, is that correct? Are you on any medications currently?
No.
So, okay. Do you have any mental health diagnoses?
No.
What do you believe you were self-medicating for if you're not currently on any medications and don't have any diagnoses?
I just feel like I was taking it too far from some things that possibly happened in my childhood with my mom and my father's separation and stuff like that.
Did you ever have any treatment regarding those issues? Any therapists or counselors or any sort of treatment?
Maybe when I was in my teens. I believe once I got out of a foster home, I believe there was therapy required by the state. But I did not seek out therapy.
Okay. And there was never a diagnosis given?
No.
Okay. Did you... did you ever have any follow-up care for when you were sent to the hospital with suicidal ideation?
No.
How long were you in the hospital for the fall?
I believe 48 hours.
Did the hospital recommend any follow-up mental health care?
No.
That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant. Questions by the board?
You have quite a history of alcohol and violence over that period of time. And you say you didn't have any treatment for alcohol.
No.
It just seems, from my experience, almost every one of those cases, the court's going to order some type of treatment. Are you saying the court did not order any treatment, or you didn't do it?
Well, after a short time when I was incarcerated, I did do a 30-day program at the Farrell House in New Britain.
Okay, so you did have treatment?
Yes. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Was that inpatient or outpatient?
Yes.
So you were in rehab for 30 days?
Yes.
Why did you say you had not had any treatment? That's pretty significant.
I didn't.
That's not going to the doc one time. That's 30 days of being locked down.
It just slipped my mind. I'm sorry.
What other treatment have you had?
Other than that, I think that's about it.
Is that about it or is that it?
I think so. And then support from friends. I have some good friends.
Okay. And go back to AA. Never did AA?
No.
When was the last time you had even one drink?
It was January 22nd of 2022. 2.5 years ago about.
All right. So you didn't quit right after these incidents. You continued drinking after 2019.
Yeah, for a little while.
And why do you think there are no police contacts after 2019 if you... you know, continue drinking, nothing really changed.
I started to smarten up and focus on my career. I also quit marijuana.
When was the last time you smoked any marijuana?
At least 8 years ago.
Tell us about the time you were sent to the hospital. What was that case? When you were sent to the hospital for suicidal ideations?
I was breaking up with an ex-girlfriend and I had a lot to drink and I believe I said something stupid like I'd rather just be dead than lose you.
Okay, so what happened? The police were called?
Yeah.
Was that Middletown?
Her father was concerned and called the police and they came and they said, well, because you said you wanted to end your life or something like that, we have to.
All right, what hospital did you go to?
I believe it was Middlesex.
Okay, and what happened at the hospital?
I stayed there overnight and I believe was released the next day.
Because you earlier said 48 hours, that's 20. That's basically 24 hours. Between the 30-day inpatient treatment and the time that you made a suicidal comment and were sent to the hospital, do you have any medical documentation with you today to document that you did successfully complete 30 days of treatment or that you were not ordered to do or at least suggested to do follow-up on the after you were the suicidal ideations?
No, sir, I do not.
Why not?
It just wasn't any documentation or anything to go with that.
Well, there is. I mean, certainly there would be a certificate of completion, I would imagine, for the 30 days. The hospital would have intake and discharge papers to show what they found. They almost always recommend follow-up with another provider. And you're saying they didn't do that this time?
No, I don't remember.
Or you did not follow up with anybody?
No, it wasn't.
When you, tell me about the case where you struck your brother with the pipe. I'm assuming this is the brother again, right? Yeah. Tell me what happened there.
At that time, my brother was using drugs and there were some times where things would go missing from the house. And I lost my temper when I discovered my grandmother told me that her wedding ring was missing and I lost my temper and picked up a broom and went after him.
Was it a broom, or I got the impression it was like a metal pipe, but was it a broom?
No, it was a metal broom.
A metal broom?
Very thin.
Okay. What were the nature of his injuries?
I don't know. Maybe a bruise or two.
Did he go to the hospital?
I don't remember.
Was he a threat to you?
Somewhat at the time.
Well, was he a threat to you because you were hitting him, or did he do something first to make him a threat to you?
I believe I went and confronted him about that, and it was a threatening environment, and it was more of just losing my patience with the stealing. And
how do you think that may have unfolded differently had you had a firearm on you?
I grew up with hunting and fishing and stuff like that. There has pretty much always been a firearm around, and I've never decided or thought about using one against my brother or anybody else. Okay.
Was there a firearm in the house that day?
No.
Okay. Go back to the shots fired call. I know you said you didn't have a firearm. That was pretty clear. Was there a firearm in the house that somebody else could have been using?
There were firearms in the house, but nobody was using
it. Nobody was using it. So how did the neighbors come up with that? They heard shots and saw water being...
I'm going to object to that question because he doesn't know. He can't read the neighbor's mind.
Well, he can say he doesn't know, or he could say the neighbor told me.
Okay.
I have a neighbor that's anti-gun, and they have been calling the police on me and my brother since childhood when we target shoot with air rifles in the backyard.
Yeah. So were you shooting an air rifle that day?
Not that day.
So maybe they saw it in the past?
Yeah,
it's a very specific allegation. You heard shots, heard four shots, saw water being hit out front of the house. It's very specific. It's not just I heard shots. So to me, that means something happened. I'm just trying to figure out what that was.
I don't know. It was pouring rain that day, and I was inside.
Okay. So and when did you get the pardon?
I believe that was like 6 or 7 years ago.
And someone said that at that time you were a convicted felon. Was that for the assault on your brother?
I believe so, yes.
So it must have been an assault second, maybe? Or
I think so, because I picked up a broom and swung it.
Yeah, so you used the weapon, or it's either that or the nature of the injuries, I think. All right, thank you.
Are there questions by the board?
Yeah, there were listed a number of incidents of arguments. I don't want to say disorderly conduct, but arguments with other folks. And four of them said that there was a firearm or some type of instrument, like a BB gun, involved. Do you recall those?
Some of them, yes.
All right. Can you discuss or give us some examples of why you, of those incidents?
Well, my father has 4 acres, and since, like I said, me and my brother, since we were little kids, have used air guns in the backyard. We have a backstop in the corner by the train tracks that we shoot into, so the pellets are going in a safe direction. And one of the neighbors tends to see us in the backyard and likes to call the police because she feels like her house or her kids or something could be in danger, when that's not the case.
All right. Of those 4 incidents, how many of them were due to your neighbor calling, if you recall?
Maybe 1 or 2.
Okay, what were the other 2?
I don't remember.
Okay. You don't remember the other two incidents at all?
Which incidents are you talking about?
That are listed as you causing some type of dispute or having an incident with others in possession of firearms or BB guns.
One here at the gas station.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Gray, maybe could you be more specific?
Tell me about the one at the gas station.
One at the gas station, I was with a buddy. We were coming back from hunting, and he was intoxicated and was talking to me about something about hunting, and somebody in the gas station overheard that and got alarmed, apparently.
Were you displaying a firearm?
No.
Was there some type of incident that caused...
No, I believe we were inside the gas station getting a coffee or a snack or something like that, and maybe the subject matter of hunting alarmed somebody who was a non-hunter, I'm not sure. When we had left the gas station, we were on the way home and then got pulled over.
Okay. how old were you in 2010? Easy.
2010. Would that be in my 20s? 24, 26.
Thanks.
Other questions by the board? Seeing none, next witness.
I'd just like to ask him another question, please.
Sure.
You said something about self-medicating. Did you mean that you were just trying to make yourself feel better?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I think you may have perceived that when people hear the term self-medicating, they think that you have some sort of mental health diagnosis. Do you?
No.
No, okay. then I guess I would like to call my next witness, please.
May I?
Yep.
Follow that up. So your testimony, if I'm correct, is that when you stated you were self-medicating, you simply were drinking to feel better for a period of about 10 years, which resulted in multiple police involvements.
Possibly after hanging out with my friends and taking it a little too far, there could have been arguing when I came home and my father was disappointed that I was that much under the influence.
Well, so originally you stated that you were self-medicating with alcohol.
I had no other way to put it.
Okay. Clarified by your attorney, just that you were drinking to feel better.
Yeah, with friends having a good time.
Okay. You've also testified that that drinking was problematic for a period of about 10 years or so in your life.
Yes, it was getting continuously worse.
Okay. That's all I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Anybody else have any other questions about that? Okay, next witness.
Okay, so the next witness, and I wonder, could we skip using the names which would identify the appellant, please?
We may. So it's father and brother?
Right, and I think I'd like to call the, let's just go down the line here. I'd like to call the appellant's father, please. So we're not going to use your name, okay? But
okay.
Your relationship to the appellant here is that you are his father, right?
Correct.
Excuse me, Attorney Sherman. May I just ask you?
You're probably going to want to switch seats because I don't know
right.
That.
When do we switch seats?
I just want to ask the appellant what town he lives in. I should have done that earlier.
Oh,
I should
have done that alone.
Okay, still living in I know.
After all,
you
don't
have been
no,
very
I thought of this, but everyone can just got this correct.
Okay. Yeah, if you guys want to switch seats.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you've known him all his life, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And he had lived with you a great deal of his life, or is it all his life?
He lived with his mother for up until he was about 17.
You got to speak up louder so they can hear you.
He lived with his mother.
Okay.
Up to the age of about 18.
Thank you.
Okay. And you heard the testimony about these many incidents in the past. Were you involved in some of these incidents? Like, were you a victim in some of these incidents?
Yes.
You were?
Yes.
Okay. How do you feel about him getting his permit as a victim in some of these incidents? Are you here to support him getting his permit?
Yes, I'm here to support him.
Why?
Because I've seen a traumatic change. He got rid of all his bad friends. He acknowledged the fact that he was going downhill. Pot, alcohol, that crater. All his issues were as a result of alcohol. Finally, one day, he clicked in, and he decided to, that was not the way to go. He stopped 100%. No, he didn't go to AA, he didn't go to hospital. He finally clicked in his head that it's not the way to go. If he wants to continue and have a normal life, that's what he had to do, and he realized it. And when he stopped, everything changed.
You say he changed his friends, he doesn't see the same old friend?
He got rid of his bad friends, and he got a good job. And he just changed 100%.
If he had a pistol permit, would you feel safe?
Now I do.
Now?
Now.
10 years ago?
He had issues back then.
Okay, but now you feel safe?
Yes.
Okay. I have nothing further.
Cross?
In your opinion, would someone who's been convicted of domestic violence be someone who should have a pistol permit?
I'm going to object on the issue of relevance, and it's an opinion. It's a hypothetical, non-factual question. It's not
about factual questions. I'm asking his opinion because he's here to support his son. He's not convicted of anything.
Okay. So, yeah, I sustain the objection. There's no foundation for it. So.
He's already testified that he supports the appellant getting a permit.
Just a question.
Other questions?
No.
Does the board have questions for the father? No.
I guess I'd like to ask one on redirect that the sergeant here inspired. You're aware of all or most of these incidents that the police talked about, right?
Yes.
You're aware that your son had a record, right?
Correct.
You're aware that he was arrested many times for violent incidents, right?
Yes.
Okay. and knowing that, you still support him getting his permit as of today?
Now I do. Yes.
Now you do. Okay. Very good.
Well, now that you brought it up, attorney, should you have a follow-up question? I feel like now we let it in. Did you have
That's
a follow-up
right.
question, Sergeant?
Okay. I want to.
So it's your opinion that people who have been arrested or possibly convicted of domestic violence can at some point become a suitable candidate to obtain a pistol permit?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions by the board? Next witness, Attorney Sherman.
Thank you. I'd like to call the appellant's brother, please. So play musical chairs, please.
Thank you.
Look at this. It's not amazing. All right, very good. So we're not going to use your name, but you are the appellant's brother, correct?
Yes, sir.
You've known him all his life or your life, right?
I hope so.
Okay. And you lived together for a lot of this time, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. excuse me. You've heard the testimony about these many incidents. You were a victim in some of these, right?
One of them.
Okay. The one involving the broom, was it?
Yes, sir.
Were you injured?
I had a scratch on me, but they brought me to the hospital, and they put a bandage on it. It was not a severe injury, and the girlfriend was not injured.
Okay.
I don't know how to object properly, but he's referencing a broom, the article, and the only factual information I have
for you.
Said that it was a 5-foot long metal.
All right, so this
it
is
was actually a
all
piece
right.
of aluminum.
Ooh, all right, everybody stop. This is direct examination. If you want to cross-examine him after, we can clarify later.
What I'm objecting to is him referencing a broom in the question. When
well, if that's his recollection,
I
don't.
It is what the appellant testified to, also.
Right.
A broom handle. But then you can clarify.
Okay. Yeah, you can bring it up later.
Was there a pipe involved?
No. Can I say something?
Please do.
All right, so the object was an aluminum piece to my tonneau cover from my truck that was parked outside of my grandmother's house. So a tonneau cover is that leather, like little fake leather cover that covers the back of your truck, and it has ribbing in it so your tonneau cover doesn't flap around. My tonneau cover was already broken, but those aluminum slats were still in the bed of the truck.
So it's not a broom?
So it's not a broom, no. It's not a pipe. It's a piece of the tonneau cover. I know exactly what it was.
A third possibility.
This was okay. A long time ago.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what it was. I had a scratch on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lot bigger than my brother is. I stole from him. I had issues with drinking and drugs. I have no excuse for stealing and stuff like that. It was just what I thought I had to do to continue my addiction. And he was getting sick of it, and I don't blame him, because he was working, I wasn't, and I was stealing from everybody in the family. And I don't blame him for being angry at me, and I'm a lot bigger than he is. And when he confronted me, I confronted him back. You know what I mean? So, and at that point, he had to do what he had to do, but my grandmother, who was older, she was heavier set, We're arguing, yelling at each other, pointing at each other, all this stuff, and she fell to the ground, and I think it was her leg, not her hip, that broke. Nobody hit her. Nobody purposely tried to swing and hit my grandmother. She was honestly trying to just break it up. She didn't want fighting in her house. All she wanted was the best for me and my brother. What I could say is, like a lot of this stuff, like him being, like not wanting to be, or being a problem during all these arrests, I can't see that at all. I think that once the police came, he was like, all right, the gig is up. Like, I'm drunk. Like, let me just go. And I don't think he's ever created problems with the police after they showed up. I think all of these instances are involved in this. I was involved in a lot of them, and it was drinking, and it was alcohol, and it was three men living in the same house. And drinking all together is not a good thing. And since then, I can speak for myself. I've changed. I've been sober for 6 years. I was incarcerated multiple times. I got into heroin, cocaine, alcohol, and I got myself out of that situation by continuing the stipulations from the state of Connecticut to go to programs and Narcotics Anonymous, and I continued to do that type of stuff. My brother did not get that far involved into drugs and alcohol. It was mostly alcohol. And these instances are alcohol-related. Since he stopped drinking, he still lives at the house. I live in Rhode Island. I'm a mechanical supervisor on a $1.2 billion tunnel project in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. I was also involved in the 4.5-mile South Hartford Tunnel project in the Local 230 Laborers Union, and I transferred to the Operators Union to do this project in Rhode Island. But since I've been gone, I come back every weekend and I visit them, and there's no issues there at all. Since he stopped drinking, there are no issues between them. Any issue that I've ever had with my father or between all of us has been drinking. We are perfectly fine without alcohol. I understand the concern by the police officers. I completely understand that, like, in their standpoint, domestic violence. But, like, when it's, like, technicality, like, reality, like, was it actual violence? Or was it, like, in the category of domestic violence? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's considered domestic violence, but, like, in, like, was he actually assaulting people? You know what I'm saying? Was he actually hurting people? And I don't think the intent was to hurt anybody. I think I had a big involvement in the anger towards me from my brother because of stealing. And I stole a lot from my father. Not only my father, the grandmother who is not here today, stealing from her, stealing from him, stealing from everybody in the family. I created a lot of these issues. And alcohol involved in family stuff like that is not a good thing. But since then, I've moved on from drugs and alcohol. He's moved on from alcohol. There's been no instances at that residence since then. And I do feel comfortable with my brother getting his permit. Because we've grown up, the way we got raised was hunting, hunter-gatherer, fishing, hunting, stuff like that. We were taught at a young age firearm safety. We got our hunting licenses. We hunt on private and state land legally with permission. We harvest the game, we eat it, we go fishing. And I think that I don't see an issue with my brother obtaining his permit at all. And I think that is a part of our lifestyle, hunter-gatherer. To have a firearm is a right to have a gun, right? So, sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. I think that you have answered all the questions that I was going to ask. So, thank you.
Sorry, did you have Cross?
Yes. You stated that part of your, if I'm correct, part of your sobriety was after being incarcerated for a period of time?
Yes, sir.
Do you still have a criminal record?
Yes, sir. I'm in the middle of the pardon process myself.
Have you been convicted of any felonies?
Yes, sir.
Do you know how many?
Two.
And what were the nature of those?
They were violations of restraining order for being at my father's house, an argumentative intoxicated with my father. They were not physical altercations, they were verbal.
Going back to the incident with the, and thank you for clarifying, with the aluminum, length of aluminum. recalling that incident, do you recall how old your grandmother was at that time?
No, I don't, sir.
Would it be fair to say she was over 60 years of age?
Yeah.
And your recollection is that she, is your recollection that she tried to stop the altercation between you and your brother?
Yes.
And this did not work, correct?
No.
Okay. So the presence of your 60-year-old grandmother was not enough to stop the altercation, and she was then knocked to the ground and you believe broke her leg, not her hip, correct?
She lost balance. She was a middle-heavy woman.
Okay. Do you recall how long her recovery was from that?
It was a long recovery because of her age.
That's all our questions I have.
Does the board have questions for the brother? Seeing none, any other witnesses? Attorney Sherman.
No, thank you.
Would you like to make a closing statement?
Yes, I would, please. No, the retired sergeant, the issuing authority's witness, started out testifying that he knew this and that about the appellant without specifying any dates. And dates are really important in a case like this because whether something happened last week or it happened 10, 15 years ago, 14 years ago, I think was the last time that the sergeant remembered of really having contact with the appellant. What this all boils down to really is whether we think that a person can change in a positive way over a period of time like that. We have a pardon process in this state for that very reason, because the legislature thinks that people can change in a positive way over a relatively long period of time. That's really the basis of our case. I wish that Dr. Conrad were here because I'm very confident that if she were, she would back me up when I say, and I know the board's seen this in other cases, not everybody has to go for formal treatment for alcohol. Anybody who's in AA or any of these other programs is going to ultimately agree it all has to start inside the person. And for some people, they need the additional support of a program, and other people have done it before and are still doing it now. And for some people, they get up one day like the appellant here and say, gosh darn it, I've had enough, and that's the end of it. We have the testimony of two people who have been very close to him and in fact were the victims in these cases, and I don't think would be here at all if they felt unsafe, if they felt that at this point these old incidents that involved them as victims should be held against him going forward. And that's why he should get his permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Sherman. Sergeant, would you like to make a closing statement?
I would, thank you. While the appellant has received pardons, and therefore has no current criminal record, I would argue that there is still strong suitability grounds for our denial. I've addressed most of these to reiterate some of them. You know, there was a period of 1,995 days, which is 5 years and 170 days, under which the appellant was subject to a protective order. That's a long period of time. There was an incident in which the appellant was sent on a police emergency examination request for suicidal ideation. There was numerous incidents of intoxication. There were many verbal domestic disputes. And then there were, you know, were issues that involved either firearms or pellet guns that caused alarm either in neighbors or in one case it was an attendant at a gas station. So there's in judging suitability of an appellant, the best predictor we have of potential future behavior is past behavior. Sometimes that behavior is way in the past, sometimes it's more recent. Obviously, if it's more recent, it carries more weight. As Attorney Sherman has pointed out, a lot of these were a little bit further in the past. But it was over a period of 10 years. And in that period of 10 years, about five of those years, the appellant was the subject of protective orders. That's something that I the issuing authority thinks is fairly substantial. As far as the crimes for which the appellant has been pardoned, I think the nature of those crimes is something that's important, whether they are misdemeanors or felonies, whether they involve domestic violence. In the academy and through my training and experience, I have learned a lot about domestic violence. Some of the things in regard to domestic violence that you're taught about are the potential of reluctant victims or victims who later recant statements. I think that's something that needs to be taken into account. And also the fact that the state has decided that domestic violence charges are disqualifiers from becoming a pistol permit holder. I understand the state has also pardoned this person, which is why it's no longer an automatic disqualifier for the appellant, but should be considered, I believe, in suitability. Thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant. Comments by the board? No comments. Chief Rosenzweig.
Issuing authority.
Colonel Lewis.
Appellant.
Mr. Gray.
Issuing authority.
Attorney Cinetti.
I find this one very difficult for obvious reasons. I mean, the sheer volume of different things that happened in his past, and then, ironically, I suppose, the fact that one morning he wakes up and says, no, no more. What's to stop him in the future at some point from saying, something bad happened to me and I'm going back? You know, human behavior, as you point out, is very difficult to predict. So I will give him the benefit of the doubt with great reluctance. And, you know, don't make me regret this decision, please. I'm torn on this one. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt, but it's hard to get past the sheer volume of all the stuff you've done in the past. And I pray you don't revert in the future. If you get, well, whether you get your permit or not, I wish you all the best. So I vote for the appellant.
Taking Attorney Cinetti's words to heart, I will vote for appellant. That's 3-2 in favor of the appellant. Thank you all.
Thank you.